Today's parak in Tanakh is Malachim Aleph, parak Tes Zayin, 16th parak. So we have reached a very fascinating situation. Basically what happened is that the book of Malachim, as we've seen, is absolutely remarkable in leaving out what you would have thought is the most dramatic and salient events of each particular melech, and simply refers us to, and the rest of the stuff, and the gedula, or whatever it is that he achieved, the wars that he fought. Take a look in Divrei Hayamim. So, what is the point of the Malachim? So, it's clear if we are not coming here to teach a history of what it is that was achieved by these Malachim, how it is that they interrelated with the world, we're coming to discuss the Malchut. Malachim, in terms of how each one of these individuals, as we saw in the Medrash, the remes, the waxing of the moon, the waning of the moon, that the book is arranged in such a way as to give us an insight into the development of Malchut from the bottom up, and to the disillusion of Malchut from the top down. So that we have reached a point in which the concept of Malchut has been totally lost in Yisrael. And as the Yerushalmi puts it, what we're now talking about is not really Melachim. We're talking about Malchut shel listiut, stolen Malchut. Yeah. Because what's happened over here is that we are now engaged in the mafia. This is about armed robbery. It's not about Malchut. So what that means is that the fundamental idea that until now we've been discussing, and of course the way in which the book is constructed, in which we constantly bounce back and forth to indicate the way such and such a melech related to what was happening on the other side of the border, so that we have the north and south, so that right now we're contrasting remarkably a melech who is maintaining Asa on the southern side of the border among Malchut Yehuda, is maintaining his Malchuts for 41 years and is a legitimate melech, is contrasted with what's happening to the north of the border, in which within those years he buries, essentially, that's the way Chazal put it, he buries them. He buries four, that's in the sense of Khrushchevs, we will bury you. In other words, we will outlive you. You have no real meaning to us other than our sing to your burial. And that, by the way, was something that people did not understand the translation of the Russian. And it was Gorim because of the translation. It was Gorim, the most remarkable changes in the American vision of the Russians, and the man didn't mean anything. All he meant was what you would say in Yiddish, all that means to say is that we're going to win this competition. Well, we'll bury you. That's nothing to do with the declaration of enmanship or anything else. And it was taken by the Americans totally out of context. But, you know, what can you do? Language pulls those kind of things. But in any event, here, Asa, Bagrub, so to speak, he outlives and he sees the passing, not only of Melachim, but of entire Batei Malchiyot. See, he lives through the first and only legitimate Melech, which was the 36 years of Yerovam, and that's it. Yerovam and some elements of Nadav, that he says sees the house of Yerovam destroyed. He lives through Basha. And he lives through, as we're going to see, Zimri, which is coming, a whole different house of Malchut. Lives through Omri. Meanwhile, what we're looking at is a very obvious contrast of a solid Malchut, which is still Malchut based of it, and which has in it, therefore, elements of true Malchut, not only because it has the justification of the Navi, but because that itself is an indication that the Torah has identified this individual as being capable of being a Giloy of the Am. It's touched the Am, understands the Am, is an expression of the Am. We saw this Lara in Yirmiyahu, in Yerovam, that what he did was, and therefore he became a father, so to speak. He became a paradigm on the same darga as David, except obviously Lara. But he becomes a paradigm in which all Hanhagat Malchut subsequently is seen as drawing from him, no matter how little they have to do with him personally. Because he is the legitimate paradigm, and we saw this initially. He had a sensitivity to what things in Bnei Yisrael he could play on, and what he played on were things we saw remarkably went all the way back to Pesel Micha, connected to Moshe Rabbeinu, his own tainus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the idea of keeping things calm and keeping things very primitive in the way people would ultimately grow into perhaps something better. So that initially we find him to be a tzaddik, as the Medrash says, right now, he's tzaddik arash, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Malachi Asharis. The rishut that was in him, indeed he's a choteu machati, but you cannot be a choteu machati on the level of Yerovam without being a melech of Rav. And he was a melech, a true melech, in terms of taking what they wanted and expressing it. That idea was the actual beginning of the breakdown in Rechavav of Malchus Shlomo. So that means the first stages of the transition from the full moon to the waning moon was where we still had legitimacy. So the first step, Rechavam on one end and Yeravam on the other end, was a legitimate step down. It was still real malchut. So the breakdown in those cases were very different breakdowns. And we need to understand those breakdowns as we go on. Once it became listiyut, at that point we have an additional advantage, because what we're looking at is not only the breakdowns, subtle breakdowns, in terms of the idea of the emergence of Malchut, where there you have the breakdown that comes from top down, that comes from bottom up, and these very, very delicate and subtle interrelationships that create Malchut, if it's true Malchut. Once we get down to the nitty-gritty that we're talking about over here, among the Malchut of listing, we can actually start separating, we can start parsing the concepts of Malchus, detangle the other elements to find what is the personal failure that would have been now the, if we were building Malchut, that we would have needed to address in the other direction. And each one of these levels expresses now personal failings that make the Malchut less and less possible and more a contradiction to the very nature of the idea of Malchut. So in the breakdown, we're actually watching the movie run backwards, so to speak. So that we're taking a look at how the complexity, it would be as if you would be taking a human brain that was working and had now taken time shots of the interrelationship between its neurons from the time that the fetus was still in the womb. And then you would run it backwards to show the degeneration, which piece is missing at which point. And that's exactly what happens here. The book is not interested in focusing on the history of the melon, on what it is that he achieved, or what it is that he did bad. It's really, to some extent, irrelevant to us. What's interesting to us is only the issues that directly relate to the breakdown of Malchut. And that's why each time the Pasuk tells us, you want to know the details of what he did? Take a look at Divrei Hayamim. That's for the history. And that's for the other elements that you need to learn. But if you're talking about Milachim, just look at this information, because it's sufficient. The rest is yeter, and it's used constantly. The yeter divrei. So therefore, when we will concentrate on what appears to be one small issue here, and leave out these massively important things. So for instance, we learned yesterday, what is the difference between winning a war against an army three times your size, and the godless of the milchama of by Zerach HaKushi, and what it is that he achieved, that's irrelevant. Because that is part of what it is that Asa was referred to as being Heilech Bedarkei David Aviv. I don't need to know precisely how, what, when. That's fascinating, and it's a godless, and so on. Look in Divrei Hayamim. The only remez that you'll find to it over here is the fact that that money was available to screw up with and to send to Aaron. That's all that's important to us. So you take a look, on the one hand, this unbelievable war, which you talk about a million soldiers, an unbelievable weaponry of Zerach. And it was a world war. He didn't come on his own from Kush. So he was bringing along from Luv, of all other countries. He had taken out, conquered Shishak, this is a major war. We not a remiss to it, other than what we need to know. And yet the little question of whether he was Bana et Arama, which was a whole different change of view, that he was willing now to allow the fortification of the borders of Yehuda against Yisrael. That is a major change in Malchut. Why? Because it shows the breakdown between the sense that Malchut is meant to be universal. So that was Asa as the man who could have fixed it. Universal, certainly to be shelet over all of Yisrael, and to make that a tikkun to ultimately rebuild Malchut's based off it, which was meant to be. Those 36 years was meant to go back to him. And that is stressed again and again. That's all that was given to Yerava. That tiny issue, did I take the stones that were used against me and make it the building of something that would be a border that is more important than an international war that is won with the most incredible Nisim and more important for this book? So that the little details are precisely what we need to focus on here. And the differences in the breakdowns is the information that's being given to us. And therefore, even though, yes, we've been filling the empty places just to make it more interesting and to put it into context by bringing the Divrei Hayamim, in a way that waters down what we need to look at. Malachim knows exactly what it's doing. So that a sefer written by Nevi'im, and that is meant to express Yirmiyahu's, where he goes out to talk about in detail in Yirmiyahu, this is what you did, and this is how we look at it, and this is the breakdown, and how the interrelationship of that breakdown relates to what was going on in the Melech's mind, or the Mafia's mind. That is absolutely essential for us to know. And so when we talked about now the fact that Basha went ahead and he destroyed everybody that was left, and that Asa was fighting him nonetheless, there was no concept of my enemy's enemy. The element that's it talks about over there is that Kol Yisrael Tsarim al Gibton. That is such an obvious breakdown in Basha. That what it is that he did, the way that he comes now to take over the Malchut, is by violating one of the most fundamental credos of what it is that we demand Achdut for, which is war. So in other words, the tactics were more important to him than any national view. But it's, he's acting here in the sense to fill the role that the Navi had given him. Whether he was aware of it or not, he was the servant of God in destroying, as Achiah Shiloni said, we're going to rip you apart. There's not going to be anybody left. You're going to be murdered, man, woman, and child. But that's exactly what Basha did. But where did he do it? While they were warring in Gibton? So in other words, what he did was he took advantage of the fact that this was a problematic war. We'll see, this war goes on for 24 years, basically. I mean, they were getting nowhere with this war. Taking advantage of the fact, and again, none of this is mentioned here. It's only mentioned in Divrei Hayamim. The fact, or even not in Divrei Hayamim. I mean, the fact that we have information that Shishak's invasion undoubtedly caused an awful lot of problems for Yerovam when a lot of the cities of Yisrael were destroyed by Shishak. And that he wasn't able to defend the country, if we believe Shishak, and there's no reason why we shouldn't, you know, where he himself writes exactly what it is that he did, so that what's important is here was a man who was willing to take political advantage against national needs to try to make a palace rebellion, murder the king, at a time when they're actually being tsar on the enemy city. That is meant to be an important statement. The fact that this was a man who began the whole question of whether we should fortify the border between Yisrael and Yehuda, it's true that Asa responded to that. And he took those stones and turned it into the opposite fortification. That itself is the pagam that we stress in Basha. And so for the first time we see a man who is openly interested only in himself, in the Malchut Shel Listiyot. And indeed that's what begins today's parak. Now, Hanani, there was a Hanani Hanavi, that we'll see, who speaks also to Malchi Yehuda. It's possible that Yehu ben Hanani, it's the same family. Hanani the father, Yehu the son, Yehu speaks about the Malchi Yisrael, Hanani will speak about Yoshafat, will speak to the Malchi Yehuda. But this was the message, a message about Basha. Ya'an asher harimoticha bin ha'afar. I lifted you up. You were a nobody. V'etenchan agid al ami Yisrael, and I allowed you to rule, and you were my tool. But then, v'telach b'derach Yeravam, v'tachati et ami Yisrael ach iseni b'chatam. You followed the paths of Yeravam. It wasn't the whole idea that could have possibly justified your actions. The only possible justification would have been that you are searching for tikkun, not that you're searching for yourself. I am going to uproot, fill, find every piece, exactly as I did for Yerovam ben Nevat. I will make you a mirror image of Yerovam ben Nevat. Just as Achiah Shiloni said to his wife, Yerovam's, the one who dies in your family in the city will be eaten by the dogs in the towns, and Ameto Basadeh will be eaten Yochlo of Hashamayim. That's the message. V'yetu divrei ba'asha v'asher asau v'rato Elohim ketuvim al sefer divrei ha'yamim l'malcha Yisrael v'yishkav ba'asha im avotav. And in his days, just as Yerovam himself was zochet kvura, he too was zochet kvura v'yikaver betirtza, which was until Achav's time, the capital basically of the Malchut Yisrael, until they built the capital. V'yimloch Ela v'no tachtav, until Ela now ruled in his place. But you should know that v'gam b'yad Yehu ben Hanani anavi d'va Adonai haya el basha v'al bito v'al kol ha-ra'a asher asa b'ini Adonai la'achisa. There were more messages than we mentioned above. The message above was the klola, in which he was going to be treated like Yeravan. But believe me that Yehu ben Hanani had a lot to say about his personal sins, the way that he had acted. Not just the Yichatiyat Yisrael. What was wrong with him? He was Machiso b'ma'asei yadav liyot kebeit Yeravan v'al asher hikah oto. What is this saying? You want to be like the person that you murdered? Then why did you murder him? So bishleim, if you hadn't been, then I wouldn't be tovei you al asher hikah oto. Once the Malchut has gotten to the level in which it's just a question of who's going to be king, me or you, but we have the same ideas, then you are just a commoner who's a common murderer. And therefore the din is mida keneged mida. That's the way you treated him. Then that's the way I'll treat you. His family was wiped out. Your family will be wiped out. And b'shnat esrim v'sheish shana la'asa melech Yehuda, Ela ben Basha became king over Yisrael in Tirza. You could say Shnatayim. We'll see clearly it wasn't the full Shnatayim. It was Shanim Akuta'ot. But over the course of 2 years, some of the first year and some of the second year. V'yichshor alav avdo Zimri sar machatzit harachev. And then his servant Zimri, who wasn't even all that great, he was in charge of half of the cavalry, the armored half. So they had split the responsibility between two generals. V'hu betirza. Now, here's the next level down. Asa had been at the war front, Bash had been at the war front, as had been Nadav. There they were, being tsar against Gibeton. This guy, Ela, is not at the war. He is back at home in Tirza, a drunken stupor, shotesh shikor, beit arza, shalabayit betirza. He's got this friend, Arza, who is in charge now of the king's personal palace, and he feels safe. Safe enough to allow himself to get drunk, a rare event where you can feel comfortable enough not to be able to protect yourself. And that's precisely when Zimri came vayakeo vayamiteo. And this was the 27th year of Asa Melech Yehuda, vayimloch tachtav, and he became king in his place. So in the 26th year, this is only the 27th year, he was molech in the 26th year of Asa, and it says that he was molech 2 years, and yet he's dead in the 27th year of Asa. So obviously these were not 2 full years. We count them as we often do, if it's 30 days of 1 year, if depending on the month, and so on. So we will, as the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah points out, there are times in which we'll count it as a year. But note that this guy, Zimri, who gets him, apparently it's connected to the fact that there he is in Tirza Shoter Shikor. So the next level down is where, at least on the first, you're talking about now people that were involved in warring, and it's possible that this was indeed an attack because of the unsuccessful pursuit of a war. The fact that Beit Yeravam was unable to protect against Shishak, unable to win a war even against Gibeton. So that Basha was part of a national thing that we want to go out. I mean, this guy Zimri over here. Basha, by the way, is never referred to as a Moret. Zimri, we'll see later, becomes a term for an Eved Horeg Adonav. Because Zimri, Eved Horeg Adonav, he is a rebellious servant who takes advantage of a moment of weakness. To just a common murderer. So we've gone down a step now. And we've gone down in terms of the king. So that whereas Basha was responsible, Ela ben Basha is an idiot. There's no responsibility. The nation can be warring, and he can be sitting drunk back in the palace. And that finished him off. And Zimri becomes now supposedly a king in his place. Well, he's a king for all of 7 days, which gives him just enough time to murder everybody in Baasha's family. So Vayi b'molcho kishivto hakisa, the first thing he does as his grand gesture sitting now on the malchut would be to murder kol beit Baasha, lo ishir lo mashtin bekir, v'goalav, v're'eu, leaves him nothing left. Not a baby, not a dog, not a friend, not someone who might take revenge. V'yashmed Zimri et kol beit Baasha, kidva adonai asher diber al Baasha b'yad Yehu hanavi, exactly as God had spoken about in Yehu, the same way that Achia Shiloni had spoken about the death of Yeravam's family. El kol chatot Baasha v'chatot Ela beno, and this was what came to them asher chatu v'asher echetiu et Yisrael, for what they had done and how they had tapped in now to the continued chet of Yisrael as Yeravam had done. Lach iset Adonai Elohi Yisrael ba'av lehem, so that, and here for the first time we mention this idea of Av Lehem. This, of course, is part of the Shira of Ha'azino. So it's we've reached a point in which now it's sheer stupidities, in which there's no longer anything meaningful in it. I mean, we were talking about Yeravam and the Agalot, and here we're talking about Av Lehem. It's just all a bunch of Hada'er. And we're ready to actually bedafka go out and look for hot air to be free, rather than to take anything in life seriously. And there it was, Bishnat 27 Shana La'asa Melech Yehuda. Asa still sits firmly as a real Melech. The contrast over here is so painful. Malach Zimri Shivat Yamim Batirza. This has come down to being just an absurd spy kill spy. Daggers, gangsters, while there's real Malchus and a real Beis HaMikdash on the other side of the border. It's astonishing. And there they are. Note, all this is taking place in the background of a palace that's totally irrelevant to the people who are doing the real work. The Am HaMilchama, who are trying to fight, they're still involved in the battle in Gibton. And they hear there that back in the palace, the king, dead drunk, lying on the ground, was murdered by Zimri. So this is what they hear by Shmam, Chodim Lemot Kashar Zimri, Vegamikat HaMelech. What kind of nonsense is that? Dovayam Lichu Ko Yisrael et Omri Sar Tzava Al Yisrael Bayomo Bemachana. They said, no way we are going in for this. This is outrageous. It's time for a new Beit HaMalchut for Yisrael. And they took the Sar HaTzava. You see how clearly they were angry about the contrast, that this guy had no interest in the army. There they are playing their games. He leaves the front, and he's supposed to be involved in taking care of the rechev. We're not interested in people like that. And so all we want to do is cut him out. Now he, interestingly enough, the word Zimri, apparently, Chazal were Mikado, that he wasn't only named Zimri, but he was actually from Shevet Shimon, and represents the Kayach, the Neshama of Zimri, and therefore is all that Shimon has in terms of all of history in Malchut or Shoftim. As many Midrashim point out, each Shevet in Yisrael had either a Melech or a Shofet or both, except Shimon. Asks the Melech, except Shimon. What about Zimri? 7 days?
We don't want to talk about it.
Exactly. So why was it and that Yaakov Avinu indeed didn't give a bracha to Shimon? Because of this, they're not roiv for Malchus, because Malchus fundamentally stands against sexual sin. And what they did with Zimri, that's why it's Dafka Zimri. What they did with Zimri was Dafka to be Matir, Znus, and so on and so forth. That can never be Ma'amid Malchut. Therefore, the weakness of Shimon is expressed in here in Zimri, which is very much the contrast to what it was that the Tikkunim were in Malchus based on it, that particularly dealt with those issues. And so they decide they don't want Zimri. And they go back. Omri takes the entire army with him. Vayala Omri v'cho Yisrael imo migipton. And they decide enough of this, that they are nauseated by their own selves. Vayatsuru al tirza, and they go to make now a siege against their own capital city. Well, I mean, temporary capital. Tirzah. Everyone, you want to get the map? Tirzah is approximately 25 kilometers north of the Beit El. Sorry, west of Beit El.
Sorry,
it is north. Sorry, I always get confused with that map. I thought it was north. Okay. I always get confused.
Here's
the Beit El. North of
Beit El.
Actually, ruins of Tirzah, can you point out to the approximate location of where the war was with the Gipton, which is right near Gat, and you have that sense.
That's over here.
Yeah. Okay.
They all left the war.
They stopped fighting. They pursued it afterwards. They weren't getting anywhere anyway. I'm glad you brought that up. That itself is very important. They considered it to be the biggest national emergency. It was not to win against Gipton. It was to get rid of Zimri so that there was at least a national response to the sense of palace intrigue being absolutely unacceptable. Vayikir od Zimri kinil kada. Here, when Zimri saw that it was over, Vayavoyal Armon Beit HaMelech, he goes into the palace and burns down the whole thing on himself in a Denethor act. Vayisrofalav et Beit Melech ba'esh vayamot. And so he now brings down the palace on his own head. Al chatotav ashechatel asot hara b'inei Adonai, lalechet b'derech yiravam, u'bechatato asher asala achatiyat Yisrael. Ask him, how much could he have done? he was king b'sach hakol for 7 days. So in other words, what it's saying is that he himself, even as he was a sar machtzia rechev, he expressed the chata'ot of Yeravam in everything that he did, including the way in which he treated his soldiers, the way in which he waged war. And this was simply the culmination of an act of listaut that just reached to the palace, that's all. And all he did was bring the whole thing down on his head as self-destruction. The yeter divrei Zimri, the kishro asher kashar, Elohim ketuvim al sifri, al sefer divrei hayamim, Namalchut Yisrael. So then why do we say now, he's the only one that we talk about. Kesher. We don't talk about a Kesher to anyone else, even though they're all part of Kesher Rishaim. So the Medrash says, because the very fact that he was acting in this way even as a tsar, so that means he was kosher what his actions were as an expression of the Malchut, which with the Malchut, and therefore is worth even less than the family of Yeravam. Az, and now we get to the next horror, Az Yechalek Am Yisrael Achetzi. So now, they couldn't even decide who they want to follow. And you'll notice that Zimri was in charge of Chetzi, originally. Difficult to believe that that is a coincidence. So in other words, there were apparently factionalism that was affecting the nation already in the army. And not everybody was ready to follow Omri, even though he was the Sar HaTzava. And Zimri was only half of a general. And indeed, the Am was split into two. Chatzi Am haya acharei Tivni ven Ginat la'am licho. So there was Tivni ben Ginat. Some say ben Ginat was Hashem Mekomo. So it was from Jenin. So that it was the city of the Ganim. To make him king, Ve'achatzi achare Omri. It was apparently also from Yisachar, some suggest. So he followed Basha. He was therefore the head of the army. We find that the name occurs in the family because Achav is holding Nachala in Yisrael, which is Hashem Yisachar. So it's possible that the whole family tried to appoint people from Yisachar. Again, it's Hasharot. We don't have any riots. We're not told anywhere clearly. The last thing we learned was that it started in Yisachar. In any event, Vayechazak Ha'am Asher Achrei Omri Et Ha'am Asher Achrei Tivni Ben Ginat. They became stronger, Vayomot Tivni Vayimloch Omri. And that finished off Timri. Why did they kill Timni, it says in Seder Olam? Because he was delegitimized. How was he delegitimized? It's a remarkable story according to Seder Olam. He was delegitimized by the fact that Asa took the daughter of Omri to marry his son Yehoshaphat. So that meant that at this point, the only respect that they had in Yisrael for real Malchut was to look at Malchut Yehuda. It's unbelievable. So if Yehuda is willing to respect Omri, to marry into Omri's family, into the Mishpachat HaMalchut of Yehuda, he must be the real king. They killed him as a pretender. What a pella. Because that means that they themselves were aware of the difference, exactly as Aviam had told them. You know your guys are fake. This isn't the real thing at all. And so, here once again, we have everything in terms of Asa. So now was the 31st year of Asa. Look at this. He's burying these guys one after another. Now we're in the 31st year of Asa, Melech Yehuda. Now there's a new guy, Molach Omri al Yisrael.
Yeah.
Right. Apparently what happened is, what they wanted to do is to go with the army directly to get rid of this issue. And then when it came to, okay, but what do we do now, not as a direct army response.
Temporary to get rid of
the... Yeah, they were all melukad in that one thing that they were willing to do.
Use him, and then who do they want for Melech?
So in the 31st year of Asa, the king of Yehuda, Omri became king of Yisrael. Shtemesre shana betirtza malach sheshanim. This Shtemesre shana was not really Shtemesre shana, because the first 5 years, it says in Seder Olam, actually the gears in Seder Olam is 12 years, but the Groth changes the gears of 5 years based on the analysis of these psukim, which all the Beforshim really say, except that they're not related to the Seder Olam, that the first 5 years, they were fighting between themselves, between Tivni and Omri. You can't really call him a Melech al Yisrael. But since in the end, he was the one that won out and ended up rebuilding Tirzah and so on, so they called him now Shtemesre Shana, even though really he was only a full Melech for those Shesh Shanim. Once again, we're talking about Shanim Mekuta'ot. It couldn't have been 16 years the whole time. And was king now for 6 years. And the important moment was that Omri went, Vayiken et ahar shomron mi et shemer b'kikraim kosa. Vayiven et ahar vayikra shema ira sherbana al shem shemer adonai ahar shomron. Now this is the first time that we find any type of emshechiyut to a malchut of listiyut. Because what happens over here is that Omri gets three generations. He gets to sit on the kisei malchut, Achav gets to sit, and then Achaziah as a grandson. Now how was that? It's very interesting. But in the Tanna of Eliyahu Guf asked this question. Sitting in the Beit HaMidrash, the Chachomim are all there, and I asked them, how do you explain the fact that Omri was Zochet to this? None of the other Malachim were Zochet to this, at least they didn't know. So I'm going to tell you. The answer is this puzzle. He went and built a city in Eretz Yisrael. That is the answer. Now, how do you know that he didn't build this only for his own covenant, in which case it wouldn't have meant anything? It was only because he was concerned for Eretz Yisrael. Because it says, Vayikra Shema Yir, Hashem Shemer. Why would he call it Hashem Shemer? If it's all about him, he would call it in his name. Let's call the town Omriville. Ella must be, that in the same way, and you'll notice that he went to buy it, Piki Krayim Kasev, what is all of that? Therefore, must be he's thinking like this. Yerushalayim is bought. So that there's no question that it belongs to Klal Yisrael, and it's the Makom of Malchus Beis David, Ir David. It connects to the nature of their Malchus. Malchus Yisrael needs to have that type of thing. A city that expresses the nature of Malchus Yisrael, and that comes out of the land of Yisrael, just like Goren Arnon Arvan Ayevusi is called now Al Shmo. He's related to it. They brought the Korbanos from his things. Weird. I want to call this city Shemer, based on Adonai Haaretz. It isn't mine. It's being bought from the money of Klal Yisrael. And it's meant to be Mosif, a city for Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. That was his swus. And that building of Shomron, obviously Shomron ultimately becomes the symbol indeed of everything that's wrong with Malchut Yisrael. But it was still an attempt to create Malchut. Since it's an attempt to create Malchut, he had a Malchut for three generations because it was closer to the real thing rather than being just a bunch of intrigue. And therefore, when he won out after a war within Yisrael to be Mavar, which explains why his victory was tied to real Malchut back in Asan Yehoshaphat. So this is some element of Tikkun, even though it begins a horrific period. It was worse even than those that were before him. What was so bad about why was it worse than what was before him? Asher Hichdid Yisrael, Lach Iset Adonai Elohe Yisrael Ba'av Lehem. He now took it, everything that Yerovam ben Nevat, as the father of the Malchut, had done, and he now extended it into the Havalim that were done afterwards, and was Morish now to Achav, his son, yet a greater darga of insanity, as we'll see. V'yeter divrei omri asher asah gvurata asher asah halo haim ketuvim al sefer divrei hayamim l'malchei Yisrael. There goes Omri. V'yishkav Omri mevotav v'yikaver b'shomron. The first of the Malachim to be buried in Shomron. V'yimloch Achav b'no tachtav. And that Achav is actually extant seals and so on, using Achav that were found in that area. Why is he called Achav? So Ach, say Chazal, we're going to have it in Sanhedrin soon. Ach, says Chazal, is used as Ach l'ra. We often find that it's Ach l'tzara yivaleh. So there's, and yeah, that it stresses the ra issue. And he's an Av for Avodah Zarah, meaning that he was like a master, completely dedicated. Kirachim Av Avanim. That was his relationship to Avodah Zarah. So he, once again, is Malach in the years of Asaph. So Achav ben Omri Malach Yisrael b'shnat shloshim v'shmona shana la'aseh Malach Yehuda, was the 38th year of Asaph. V'yimloch Achav ben Omri al Yisrael b'shomron esrim v'shtayim shana. So at least we have some longevity, a real Malchut, in a town of Malchut, and we'll see that there were certain things that he achieved. V'yas Achav ben Omri hara b'nei Adonai mikol asher lefanav. And here the Medrash says this, mikol asher lefanav, is he would dress up every day, go to the head of the mas, says, what do you think my worth is today? The guy would give him an estimate of his worth on this day. And he would be mafrish right away, miser from his worth, to give it to Avodah Zarah. Yeah, an erechim. So that's he's called Asher Hitmaker Lasot Hara. We're going to see later on. Hitmaker means that he was actually willing to pay for it, to do the ras. Huh? That's like, the least of his sins was to do the things that Yerovam ben Nevat used to do. So the worst of Yerovam ben Nevat became now the least of what Achav would do. So why then do we make it dependent on Yerovam? Because Yerovam indeed is the Av of all of this. He was the Tchilo Kalkala, and he is forever the definition. And as Rabbi Yochanan puts it, there's not a telem in Eretz Yisrael that Achav wasn't certain to make an Avodah Zarah on the spot just to make it holy and to bow down to it. And so that was a Tosefet that we've never saw before. And he would write al daltot shomron that Achav kafar b'Elohei Yisrael and ilo chelek b'Elohei Yisrael. This was the first open merida la'achis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayikach isha. Vayanakel akto b'chatot Yerovam ben Nevat. Vayikach ishat Izevel. But it et Baal melech Tzidonim. This was the final end of the great brit with the Tzidonim that Shlomo had been nichshalim. Vayelach vayavodet ha-Baal vayishtachulo. And so he went and imported yet the Elohei Tzidonim, so that he took Izevel, which itself is a lashon of Avodah Zarah, and the Bat et Baal, which obviously is a relationship to the Baal itself. Izevel is a lashon of Zevel. Yeah. And he would bow down to that Baal again. The question over here is whether this is his own binyan, this is her binyan. But Vayokem Mizbeach LaBaal, Beit HaBaal Asher Bana B'Shomron. And this we're going to go see that. Okay. So he built the Beit Baal B'Shomron, which we're going to see is an important place later. And Achavayaz Achavet Asherah. He also built the Asherah, which could be just the Asherah on that Mizbeach. Vayosef Achav La'asot la'ch'is et Adonai Elohei Yisrael b'kol malchei Yisrael asher hayu lefanav. He created greater anger to the extent that you're talking about people that are la'ch'is. You want to see la'ch'is? B'yamav banachio beit ha'eli et Yericho. Now, Chio beit ha'eli had nothing to do with Achav, because Chio comes gufa from Yehoshaphat. Yericho is not even in that chelek. It's in the chelek of Binyamin. What in the world was Chiel Beit HaEli doing building Yericho? So we make this dependent on the very fact that it was Bimei Achav. In other words, it's only within that type of context, within that type of hashrah, where somebody knows that Yoshua had cursed the man who would build Yericho so that he would now start its foundations with the death of his oldest son and finally put up the mezuzah, as you understand, with the death of his youngest son. You got to be out of your cotton picking mind to do such a thing. And exactly what this guy does, and knowing full well, because Ba'aviram b'choro yizdah, he now started the foundations and his oldest son died. You think that that wasn't enough? Ubiskuv tziro, with his youngest son, he set up the doors. Yitziv d'latah. Kidvar Adonai Shadiber b'yad Yoshua bin Nun. And this teaches us with saying, from the oldest to the youngest, as he continued to work, he would use yet another son. Builds another level in the city, loses yet another son. So, I mean, Ba'aviram, as Chazal put it, Ba'aviram b'choro, maybe you could say he thought that, you know, it didn't apply here, because according to Chazal, this wasn't on the spot of Yericho. It was near Yericho, and he called it Yericho, but it wasn't really built on the place of Yericho, and nonetheless, it was part of the Kalala. So you should have, yeah, it's somewhere Medayek that it's written Yericho, as if to say, that's not that Yericho. So he should have learned, you don't think? His first son dies, his second son dies. He's got to go through a family of seven kids. Why? It's worth it. That's what it's saying. You've got to be so totally committed to Ra that you're willing to even to risk this kind of thing, to go through this kind of thing, because you are going to make your points. It starts off as an investment in a nice housing project and ends up becoming, ain't nothing going to stop me. You see people like this. It's unbelievable. You really see people like this. Ain't nothing going to stop me. And that started really with Yeravam. His hand withers, the whole idea. Okay, but can we get past this, you know? It's certainly not going to stop me. And this is like the most unbelievable lecture. Moshe Leo told me, I'm not a mice like this, which means not that the person was so insane. It's just like in the past couple of years, that there was an argument between some people back in Geneva. And the Rav Paskin, like one of the antagonists, and the other guy insulted the Rav and didn't want to set his din. So what happened is, some say that the Rav said something and cursed him, but had akpadot on him. So this guy had two sons. He had a son that had never had a child, and that year had a child. And the entire family was wiped out in a car crash after the baby was born. Exactly 1 year later, on the day of the yard site, the other son was killed, also in a car crash, without ever having had any children. It's like, oh my God. But at least over there, the guy went back to the Rav and made his peace with the din and with the Rav. But these kind of curses are not the kind of thing that anybody normal is going to start playing with. So you see the level. What is the hakadosh? It's unbelievable.